Jen, I've had a day.
Me too.
I've had a day that began with, it is January, everyone. I want you to know that this podcast was recorded in January, because the rest of this story, for people who don't live in New York City with children, it's going to sound crazy. I walked into the coffee shop this morning to write, and I actually had like a really big thing that I had to do with my manuscript this morning, because I realized something was terribly wrong with it. And one of my daughter's friends' moms walked in. She like just sat right down across from me at the table, and she was like, oh, are you thinking about camp? It's time to register for camp.
Oh, God.
All the camps are already full. And I was like, what? And then I like quickly registered my daughter for like 8 weeks of camp in the summer. And I'm not even sure like
what it is.
No, they're like probably in some lady's house. It's fine.
Sure.
Is she going to be in my house? No, then it's fine.
Yeah. Those are dark years for me.
I mean, she's mostly good, especially, you know, I will say on snow days, there's a lot of sit on this couch and watch Elena of Avalor, which your kid did not have.
No, but, no, we didn't. He didn't at all.
Anyway, but camp feels, I mean, yeah. It's not even sleepaway camp. It's just like,
yeah,
go to the aquarium and look at sharks camp.
Yeah, yeah, sure. He went to camp at the school he goes at where I work and when he was really little. But I will put in a plug and I'll put this in show notes. Everyone knows I live in Chicago, the great state of Illinois. And when he was interested in trying sleepaway camp, my husband was like, that's not really a thing a lot of Black people do. And if I can be honest, but there is one camp in this entire country that is owned by a Black family, and it is in Illinois. And we sent, and it is like, the whole purpose of it is like multicultural, to like just like really help kids understand their identity. And it's like, you know, all of the counselors come from all over the world. All the kids are really like, like really diverse. Cool. It's a tiny little camp out in Illinois, like, I don't even know where, I'll be honest with you, towards Iowa. And it's called Camp Coupagani. And I know, and my son loved it. And so
it
he went there.
It sounds like a movie camp.
Yeah. It really honestly was a really cool experience. And it was, we felt really great about sending him there. So
that's awesome.
He went there. Yeah. So if you're looking for a really cool camp for your kids, and you're about to like put them on a plane to O'Hare, they'll come pick them up at O'Hare, take them to Camp Coupagani.
Can I tell you my own personal camp story?
Yes.
From when I was a child. This will come as literally no surprise to our longtime listeners. So I grew up in Rhode Island, the child of an Italian and an English woman. And camp was like, I mean,
sure.
That's not a thing.
It's not a thing.
But I really, 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 really wanted to go to camp. And my mom was like, all right, well, I'll sign you up for day camp. You're not doing sleepaway until you really understand the level of what you are asking for. So I was maybe 8 or 9, and I went to the day camp that was part of, like, she was like, you're going to be a Girl Scout because then you can go to this, like, day Girl Scout camp. And I was like, fine. And I hated being a Girl Scout, like, hated it, hated going to the meetings and, like, getting the stupid patches. I did like the cookies, though. Shout out to the Old School Romance Book Club, where there's a thread. Yeah. If you go over there, you guys, you can like order Girl Scout cookies from all over the country, from all sorts of book club members who have kids who are Girl Scouts. Anyway, so I went to this day camp. So she dropped me off in the morning and I was, you know, maybe eight or nine. And I had to pee and they took me to an outhouse and I said, oh, no. And then I said, God. You call my mother. I'm leaving now.
And
I did.
Scene. Yeah.
Like, 2.5 hours at camp.
Yeah.
I then met an outhouse, stared into the dark abyss of the outhouse, and I was like, not for me.
Yeah, no, I'm not really a camper. No, so that's not my thing. City camp's pretty fun, though. Yeah, there's like museum camps and
yeah, my daughter's going to the aquarium for 2 weeks and like to the museum for a week.
Yeah.
It's fancy.
Sure.
And cool. The, like, she gets to hang out with penguins and learn about sharks. Like, that's really neat. I wish I had that.
Sure. The one
she went last year and she pet a sea lion.
Yeah, I know.
She came home one day. I was like, what'd you do today? She's like, I pet a sea lion. I was like, what?
Yeah, no, it's amazing. When he was a little older, the one he went to, they basically just took the CTA and the bus all over the city. Like, oh, it was like,
so fun.
Yeah, it was super fun. So they would just like get on and go to Navy Pier and go. It was awesome. They would just do that all day.
But this is not a parenting podcast.
No.
And Eric is going to be like, I deleted the first 5 minutes. It was real boring.
It was boring. You know what? Fine. It was Camp Kupagani, though. Keep that. I'd love for people to know about that joint.
Welcome, everyone, to Faded Mace. I'm Sarah McLean. We don't always talk about camp.
We will never again talk about camp.
No, I can pretty much guarantee we're not going to talk about camp because we've already talked about that Kate Claiborne book that's set at a summer camp.
It's really the best we could do.
Camp.
It was summer.
Are there other camping romances? Go.
Literally, no. I've run away from camping romances. Here's a true story, you guys. Maybe I've told this story before. I'm like such a city girl. I can't even properly identify like common animals. Like when Kelly and I were driving to
like
Women's
a cow.
March. No, listen, this is a true fucking story. We are driving to the women back from the Women's March, so like through rural Virginia, and we passed what I thought were like a field of pigs. I was like, I didn't know that like pigs hung out in the field. And Kelly was like, those are fucking sheep. And I was like, really?
All right. Well, that does feel like you should know the difference between a pig and a sheep. Like, that feels like some basic picture book stuff.
Yeah. It's all gone, right. And I'm fine with it. That's I don't fine. Go apple picking either.
That's fine. Oh, I do like an apple picking. Mm-hmm. I like something where I feel like I can like look like I'm in a magazine. I never look like I'm in a magazine.
That's a real inexplicable thing for me that city people do. I'm like, you know where you can pick apples up real
the
cheap
supermarket
the store. Jesus.
Well, yeah. Anyway. And right. Jen, why don't you tell everybody who you are?
Yeah, I'm Jen, reads romance but doesn't identify barnyard animals. And, you know.
Can't name a camping romance to save her life.
No. You named the one I have. Although, you know, it's funny.
We can do Icelandic volcanoes. No problem.
Camping romances, I'm literally like, listen, no. Although I do have, deep in the recesses of my brain, a romance I have been looking for a long time. Who knows when the fuck I read it.
We're going to do that a lot
today. We are
going to
do that, right?
It's on brand.
And it must be an old category where they are out, and I don't know why, but the hero zips two sleeping bags together.
Oh, yeah, sure. The modern version of we are sleeping in my tartan.
Yeah. And I am. And then he sort of plays it off like, I don't know, they must have thought we were together. And he just really wanted to snuggle with her. And I am dying to find that romance. So if anybody remembers that little scene.
Well, maybe your husband and you could like go zip some sleeping bags together sometime.
You guys remember the insomnia talk from last week?
I can't get no sleep.
That's you're like that you sounds know like they, hell.
God, yes.
You know, so this is another. We're just talking about camping still, but so now you guys have heard my story, right, about the outhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where I'm at. Like, I don't use porta potties. I don't go far from. Like, I just don't. Like, I don't go to concerts outside because where would I use the toilet? I mean. Where am I going to pee? I'm like, you know, when you're pregnant and like, you're like, I got to suss out the bathrooms anywhere I go. I'm like that, but all the time, not pregnant.
Sure.
So when we were getting married, Eric and I were talking about like, okay, well, where are we going to go on our honeymoon? And we made this list and it was like this really great list, of, like cool things all over the world. And I read in like some travel magazine about this, like, trek that you could take in the Andes up to I guess it would be Machu Picchu and I don't know. I'm like, I'm sorry, you guys, I'm sorry to our South American listeners because I should know this, but it was like basically the like takeaway was, and you go on llamas and it's like a week up the mountain and you go with a private chef who cooks you like stuff from the world. Like, you just, like, eat. He like, sources food as you're going up the thing. And I was like, Eric, wouldn't this be amazing? This would be the greatest honeymoon. He's like, you want to take a trek up a mountain for a week with a llama? He's like, you know, Sarah, there are no bathrooms. And I was like, okay, this is fine. This is fine. He's like, and then he was like, and what happens? Like, what if they can't source the local? Like, what if what's there is a guinea pig? And I was like, I see what you're coming to.
I admit that.
And I feel like maybe this is not the right choice for our honeymoon. So we went to Greece instead, and that was really wonderful.
Well, that's nice.
Yes.
That's very nice. Sarah.
There were bathrooms everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah.
They have bathrooms at the Parthenon. It's fine.
Sarah, what are we talking about this week? I actually, it's going to be a really nice pivot, because if you let me talk about a book first, we're going to do the most I'm excited about today. You tell them.
All right. So, you guys, we want to do something really fun because, as you know, I'm on deadline and romance is kind of bizarre right now. There's a lot going on, although it's been a pretty quiet week. this week, the shit show is in Litfic with American Dirt.
Yes. Thank God. What a terrible story that is.
You know, today I was talking to somebody who's like in that Litfic world and I was like, what about American Dirt? And she was like, what about American Dirt? And I was like, what? How do you not know? And she was like, I swear to you, Sarah, I had no idea. So, like, I think it's just, I think it speaks volumes to, like, first of all, I feel really great about all the people who blew up my phone about American Dirt. Like, these are people who, I'm glad I've, like, curated my group very well.
Sure, that you know.
Anyway, and then we're not going to get into it because Adriana Herrera is going to join us in a few weeks to talk about books by Latinx authors, writing marginalized characters. We're gonna ask her all the questions that people, you know, have about how to do this right, who should be doing it, how they should be doing it, who should be getting paid for it, what they should be getting paid for it. So stay tuned for that. But anyway, so there's a lot going on in the world, and Jen and I are tired. And it's only January. So we want to do something fun. So we decided we're going to do old categories, old category romances that we loved from our youth.
Yes.
You guys, there are some deep cuts in here. I'm real excited. And we're going to play the Does Anyone Remember This Game? Because I have looked for two separate categories this week and cannot find them. So anyway, it's going to be a ride. We're going to tell you stories that are just bonkers. And all of them, I have found all of my books online still available. Some of them available now from the authors directly because they've gotten their rights back. So we're going to blow up some Kindle, some like Kindle numbers for some of these authors.
Or I will say too, like a lot of these are, you can get the old, like, I have a bunch of them that I bought on Amazon that, you know, like they're used and it's like they're a buck. Or like Thrift Books is a great place to also go and get like old category romances. And I got to tell you, it is both, like, you have to do it with caution. It was a different time and you are going to read some shit.
I did not reread. So heads up, everyone.
Yeah. I was like,
I have no idea what we're about to get into. Like, it's possible, like, here there be dragons.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, in one case, for me, there definitely is a dragon.
So. Oh, yeah.
But I meant it metaphorically and also literally, so.
So, yeah, I would just say, you know, when you are diving back into the archives, you're going to see some things. And so just
just take it as you will.
We're
like, doing a thing here.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the first time you watch 16 Candles again as an adult and you were like, oh, shit.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like that. So, Sarah, why don't you talk about, you really came to romance from, like, Joanna Lindsay path.
Well, so here's the thing. My first romance novel was Jude Devereaux's The Black Lion. We've talked about it. We're not going to talk about it as a book that blooded us because woof. But I did read that. Yeah. And then, which was a standalone. But my sister, who is a decade mm-hmm. older than me, was a Harlequin. No, not a Harlequin. I've realized now it's not Harlequin. She was a Love Swept subscriber.
Love Swept was my jam.
Yeah. Those like purple, you know, like the pastel. Swoosh. Yeah. Oh, you're holding one. She's holding one. That's an Iris Johansson. I mean, like, yeah, like those with the swoosh.
Sure. On the swoosh white on swoosh. Them.
And so she would get them. And she would, like, it was a subscription service, just like Harlequin, I think, mm-hmm. still is a subscription service. And you just pay it, like, she paid her, like, $5 a month or whatever, and 4 books would come in a box.
Yeah.
And they were under the bed. Because she was hiding them from my parents, which is kind of weird. I never hid them from my parents, but that's the difference between a Cancer and a Sagittarius, I guess. I was like, well, I'm doing this.
Yeah. Well, I guess you probably could have been like, they're hers. I don't know how they got under my bed.
Yeah. So that's that. So I was reading both. Like, all my contemporary experiences as a kid were category.
Yeah.
All my historical experiences as a kid were standalones.
Were there even contemporaries that weren't category in the 80s?
Contemporaries. Well, there was. McNaught did the that sort of collection.
Yeah, right. Those. Okay.
We should read Perfect.
Yeah.
God, it feels, those books feel like so old though. Like, yeah. You know, they're wild when it's like Glenn Close is the most beautiful actress who's ever lived. Oh, I mean, yeah, Glenn Close is beautiful, but she's also like in her 60s now.
Yeah.
And right. So like, it just feels like super weird.
Well, and I definitely remember like Sandra Brown making the jump with, what was it, like Slow Heat in Heaven?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember that happening and me being like, oh, this is different.
Yeah.
So, like you, I found, like many, many romance readers, I found a bag. I came across a bag of romances. And in this case, they were in my grandmother's basement. My grandmother was not a reader, and definitely she was not reading these books.
I found it.
What is it?
I found it. I'm going to keep trying different words to find this category romance that I was looking for, and I found it.
What is it?
Well, no, you keep going, and I'm saving it up.
Oh, my God. Okay, so anyway. And this is the thing. So this was a bag of remaindered romance novels without the covers. And I was, you know, we would go over to my grandma's and hang out for hours. I'm sure my mom was just like, I gotta have some time. I totally remember being at my grandparents a lot, which is awesome. And I would just get bored. We'd just do whatever. And I started reading these books. And the very first book I ever read was a book called Pink Satin by Jeannie Grant. And I reread it and a bunch of like, so in, you know, looking Wait, back.
This was your first romance novel?
Yes.
I can't believe we've been doing this for how long and we've never talked about that.
Yeah. No. And so here's the thing, Sarah.
Jeannie Grant, does she still write?
I think under a Jennifer Green.
Jen's going to, Eric's going to be like, and there were keyboards tapping the whole time. Isn't it? I mean, that's what this is.
Sure,
right?
We're searching it up. Jeannie Grant. No, I have this book, Sarah. Here's the thing. I bought it off Amazon. I had never seen the cover before.
Ah, oh, because the cover was ripped off.
Because it was ripped off.
Because it was remaindered.
It was remaindered. So for those of you who don't know what this means, basically, if the categories for a month don't sell, Harlequin doesn't want them back. Silhouette doesn't want them back. So they rip off the covers and basically report them as destroyed. And I think the bookstore is just supposed to trash them, right?
Yeah, you guys, this is actually the dirty, dirty secret of publishing. Like, yeah. I have a remaindered story too. I read Bertrice Small's All the Sweet Tomorrows because it was remaindered. So it's called remaindering. If a hardcover is in a store and it's been on the shelf, like, you know, I don't know, there are every store order, they know how many of, say, like, the newest Stephen King they're going to sell. right? Mm-hmm. They can predict, like, we're going to sell 200 of the newest Stephen King, and it's going to come out in hardcover. And let's say a store overbuys. They buy 250, and yeah. then they have, like, 50 of these books left. So they're going to keep a few on the shelf because he's Stephen King.
Sure.
But they don't have room. Like, independent bookstores do not have room, or any bookstore. Like, bookstores just don't have the room to keep 50 copies of everything. So if they're hardcover, they pack them back into a box, and they mail them back to the publisher, where they go back into the warehouse and just sit on a shelf until they get shipped off somewhere else. If they're paperback,
yep,
they get remaindered, and that means they rip the cover off, and you're supposed to destroy them. In yeah. fact, on many, many paperback books, if you look on the inside in the title page, it says if you have received this book without a cover, you're right. basically reading stolen property, right? The author didn't get paid, the publisher didn't get paid, whatever. So technically, I mean, like, I've seen pictures of remaindered books in stores, and it's really sad, especially for somebody like me, right? Like, all sure. my books are in paperback. And so they just rip the cover off and throw them in like a big giant dumpster.
Right.
And the truth is that, I mean, there are a lot of things that I would really like to fight for in publishing, a lot of things. One of the big things I'd like to fight for in publishing is for trade paperbacks that get returned, quote, to the publisher, because yeah. that's what happens. Then the bookstore gets their money back, right. and the publisher counts those books as unsold. I would like for New York City publishers to figure out a way to get those paperbacks into prisons,
yeah,
into
donate them
women's
somewhere.
Shelters, into homeless shelters, like places where people who can't afford books,
yeah,
can access
absolutely,
books.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there has to be a way to do this,
right?
And it's just like all things in publishing, like it just feels like you're constantly putting out like the current fire, and there's never.
Like, what are
we
doing here?
But, like, if you're somebody who's sitting at home and has, like, lots of time and, like, the bandwidth and the money to do something, and you're thinking, I wish I knew what to do, I'm yeah. telling you, it would be great if there were a program that could do that.
Like, and looking back, I sort of, like, remember a bunch of the titles that came out of that bag. And I think the thing that I would say is it must have been, like, 1985. So I was, you know, 12 or 13, and I was like 7th or 8th grade. I remember reading romances in 8th grade, so it must have been maybe that summer before. And I, like, looking back, especially at those really early ones, one of the things that really strikes me about category romances is that they were about working women. Every single one of them. Now, my mom worked, so it wasn't like I didn't have a model for that in my home. It wasn't, like, revolutionary in that way. But when I go back and have, like, read some of these, I'm kind of amazed at how, you know, these were women who were, like, fighting off sexual harassment in the workplace. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, like, fighting for, like, fair and equal treatment from their bosses. To, I mean, some of it's pretty great.
Yeah. Yeah. So Jeannie Grant is also Jennifer Green, is also Jill Hart, is also Allison Hart, is also Jessica Massey. I mean, you guys, wow. this yeah. is the so we're going to get down into it. And we're picking, you know, Jen and I have, like we said, picked some deep cuts. And, like, I found, like, at least one of my authors, like, she doesn't appear to be writing anymore, and I don't know whether that means she's changed her name or what's happened. Jennifer Green is a big enough name that she has a Wikipedia page, and that Wikipedia page has all the names.
Yeah.
Sandra Brown is a big enough name that Erin St. Clair was yep. her Silhouette Intimate Moments name.
Mm-hmm.
Nora yep. Roberts wrote under different names. And there's something else to be talked about here, and this is sort of a history lesson, but these category romance writers, for a long time, the category lines own their names.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, Jeannie Grant was Jennifer Green's, or was Allison Hart's name as she wrote, but then when she left wherever she was writing sure. for, she had to change her name because,
sure.
you know, Love Swept or Harlequin or whatever owned those rights. People have been asking, this is all sort of relevant to what's going on today, right now, but because people have been asking, like, what's the purpose of RWA? Like, what is the value of having an RWA?
Yeah.
RWA was a major player in making sure that writers, when they left a house, could take their name with them.
Yeah.
And, like, before RWA fought this, alongside many, many authors, including Nora, who wanted to keep her books. Like, you, if you left her, if you wrote categories and you left Harlequin, you left her name there.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, so then you have to rebuild your whole, like, you know, everything from scratch.
Yeah, you have to literally start over. And of course, like, back in the day, it was a little bit easier to start over because, you know, there could be sort of a whisper like, oh, yeah, Jeannie Grant is now writing as Jennifer Green. So,
sure,
you know, so like the buyers at Walden Books would say, like, okay, well, what's the chance on? We know what those books will be. But I mean, you know, one of the things that I bemoan all the time about romance history is that we've really lost so many people in the just in the shuffle. And it takes like sitting down with, you know, it's Steve Amendown looking in old RWRs, like the magazine from RWA, or like, you know, looking through old Romantic Times, issues of Romantic Times, or just, you know, happening, like you happen to say to Susan Elizabeth Phillips when you're like standing with her somewhere, hey, whatever happened to
blah, blah,
so-and-so? And she's like, oh, she stopped writing that. And now she writes, you know, Romantic Suspense under this other name.
Right. And that's it. Like, all that history is like so fascinating. But, you know, I went back and read Pink Satin, and it was right around when the Harvey Weinstein thing happened. And a link to the article, or to the review I wrote, because I basically like pulled quotes from this 1985 book and these Ronan Farrow articles and basically was like, oh, look, it's the same. This shit's exactly the same. And so part of the thing that's like really fascinating about old categories is like what's the same. And then the other thing, of course, is like what's really different. Like a book I had really fond memories of, the first Sandra Brown I ever read, you know, some book where they have a one night stand at a Snowbird, which is like some Utah fucking ski resort. Yep. And then I only vaguely remembered that she's going to like decorate his house for him. He hires a decorator. It's her. And then I was like, oh, it's a plantation. I'm going to go throw up in my mouth now. It's awful.
Yeah.
Couldn't do it.
It's one of those, you know, we talk about it all the time. Like, it's of a time, right? It's of a time. And like, look, I mean, when you're Sandra Brown or you're Jane Ann Krentz or you're, you know, one of these writers who's like Sandra Brown, Jane Ann Krentz, Barbara Dolinsky, Sandra Kitt, these were the flagship authors of Harlequin. Like Harlequin, U.S. season one is like some of the biggest names in romance. Like those are four of the original five. The fifth is gone from my head. But it's also, it's another person with like a name like that. And the reality is like, it was 1981. Like there's some crazy shit in these books.
Yeah.
You know, my favorite, if you said to me like, all right, what's the category that blooded you? It is a book by Sandra Brown. It's a Erin St. Clair book that has, it's contemporary and it has a native hero is a lawyer who is sent to prison for lawyering, for protesting, like an Alcatraz style protest. And he escapes from prison and kidnaps the heroine, and like they go on a road trip to get back to his family land and like see his grandfather who's dying. And like it was, I mean, put it in my veins. But like now when I look back on it, like, wow, there's a lot. And it was like, Sandra Brown is a pretty sensitive writer. Like these days, Sandy's on the side of right, you know, but like it was 1980, whatever. And it's a ride.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, escape from prison, abducts a girl. Like, apparently this is my kink because that's also the plot of Perfect.
Yeah. Well, how about this one? This Iris Johansson book called White Satin. She's like an Olympic figure skater. There's like always the categories. Other thing about categories is they're always mining what is happening now. So in 1984, there was a bunch of them that were like Olympics ones, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. This bitch is like, I'm sorry, like the trainer, she falls in love essentially with like the man who's like, of course, he's her guardian or whatever, and he's also a skater, but he's older than her. And flat out in this book, he realizes that she becomes sexually aware of him when she's 14.
Whoa. I mean, okay.
He gets real skeeved out by
it. Well, he gets skeeved out by it.
Right? And he does.
See, this is the thing we've been talking about. This is so, like, I'm so glad we're doing this. It's so fun. because, like, this is, everybody keeps saying, like, 30-year-old books, 30-year-old books. Like, the difference is 30-year-old books where the author isn't aware of what the problem is and 30-year-old books where the author's like, no, 14 is too young. He needs to be super grossed out.
Yeah, he is, right?
Like,
but it's grossed out in that he then, like, waits for her to be 20 and you're still like,
okay, well, I take it all back. No, but also, like, these were all these books. The heroines were all 20.
20.
The heroes were all 40. Like, it's bonkers. But, like,
it really
put
is.
It, I don't know. Put it in my veins. What's wrong with me?
It's what we came up on. That's
I
why,
know.
Right?
It is. And, like, I don't know. Also, I mean, like, there's so much to unpack because the reality is, like, we're still doing this.
Sure.
We're still thirsting after Brad Pitt, who is old. And we're like, you know, we can't keep actual movie stars who are talented actresses in business. This is a massive societal, like, systemic issue. I do want to pause and call this person out because it's amazing what he has done. And then we'll put this into show notes. But a guy named Rob Imes, I'm going to call him. I'm going to pronounce it Imes, I-M-E-S.
Okay.
Put together this just a couple of weeks ago, a guide to category romance series from 1965 to 1989. And it is unbelievable.
Yeah. Like, you sent it to me and I was like, I felt like I wandered into Atlantis or something.
Yeah. Like, it is amazing.
It's the Library of Alexandria.
It's actually how I found one of these books, because I could remember the cover, but I couldn't remember the title or the author. And so I went looking for covers that looked like it on this list. Like, so we'll put this is such a valuable resource. It's such a remarkable, like, Rob, I'm sure you probably don't listen to us, but, like, this is amazing. And I just want to thank you. 'Cause, like, every time anybody puts together a piece of history, romance history, like, it's so great. I sent it to Kelly Faircloth at Jezebel. She was like, this is amazing. I mean, like, we're all just blown away by it. So,
yeah, it's pretty great.
Okay. So,
Sarah, what did you find?
All right. Okay. So, I have two that are from names that just you could have held a gun to my head and I would never have been able to pull them out of. So do you want, I'm going to give you here. I have three I want to talk about.
Okay.
Do you want the one where the woman can talk to animals? Do you want the one where the house, the castle in Ireland or Wales or somewhere, castle somewhere, has a resident dragon? Or do you want the Elizabeth Lowell where they're big cat hunters? Not hunters, but they're like big cat scientists.
Oh, boy. The struggle. I guess I want to hear about that dragon, Sarah.
That's the one I just found. The name of the book is... Hang on. Wait, I lost it again. Oh, I mean, Sarah, come on. The name of the book is The Lady and the Dragon.
Sometimes I'm like, why the fuck can't I find these things?
I mean,
category romance is not fucking around at all.
It is a Harlequin Temptation, number 355. Mm. It was published in July of 1991.
Damn.
So little Sarah was about to be, no, was 12 and a half. So great. Let me set the stage. Michael Reese, our hero, lives in a castle in Wales. He's kind of grumpy. I mean, of course he is. And he has a problem because he is 28 years old. He's been living in this castle and he has been attacked by the dragon that also lives in this castle.
Oh, my God. Why is everything so pure and
so
good?
It's amazing. So he does what any smart 28-year-old man in Wales with a hat on his shoulder would do. You guys, I should add, this is fully contemporary. This is not a world where dragons exist. I mean,
Right.
Clearly it is. But like, that's the best part of this is like, this book starts and it's like, hello, we are in contemporary America. And so he does what any like really smart person would do in the case of a dragon attack. And he calls in Professor Catherine Glenn.
I am dead.
Who is an expert on dragons in fiction. So she comes and basically like she gets to the castle and then this is where it starts to get hazy because I don't 100% remember the plot once you actually get into it. Sure. But I remember that there's like kind of like a love triangle between the like dragon and the hero and the heroine. And the dragon is like into her, but like into her like platonically.
Oh my God.
And so like there's like some confusion about like what the dragon really wants. And of course the dragon really wants them to bone.
Sure.
And yeah, it's really wild. Anyway, it's called The Lady and the Dragon, and it's by a person named Regan Forrest, which does sound like a romance novel name. Like,
oh yeah.
That doesn't sound like a name that's real. But her name, I mean, unless your name, if your name is Regan, if you're out there, if you're listening to us, just know that like baby Sarah had a sexual awakening with The Lady and the Dragon, Harlequin Temptation number 355. And it, I don't know really, and I just ordered it actually today, now, like 5 minutes ago, because I was like, I do not remember. And there are two reviews of it on Goodreads, and one of them is 1 star. This book once again reminded me how much I loathe romance novels. So, A plus.
Oh, wow. Because
this book truly probably blooded me. It's one of them.
Ooh.
And I don't know. And I just Googled Regan Forrest, and I can't find any information about her. She wrote for a while. She wrote for about 10 years, and then she stopped writing.
Man.
So, if you know about Regan Forrest, let us know.
Woo.
If you're friends with her, please tell her we just put her name on. We just did a podcast about her.
I mean, talk about deep tracks. All right. Do you want to keep going? Or are we going to go back and forth?
No. Now you give me an option.
Okay. So do you
wait. No, she died.
Oh, that's sad.
Oh, my gosh. She was born in 1935. Ooh. She died in 2010. Oh, my gosh. On January 21st. Which is this week.
Oh, see?
So, you guys, well, I'm sorry. You know, best wishes to Regan Forrest's family.
Okay, Sarah, I have, would you like one about,
this is my favorite. I want all interstitials to be this way now.
Okay. Do you want one about a man who's returned from Vietnam? Do you want one about a widow and a widower who between them have 7 children.
Ooh.
Or do you want an Elizabeth Lowell?
No wonder you're one and done.
I know. Do you want Elizabeth Lowell about the Great Barrier Reef?
Let's save the Elizabeth Lowell since we both have one for the end. So let's get the kids out of the way. Tell me about that one.
Okay. So Sarah, I, like you, was a huge fan of The Love Swept and
The Swoosh.
And my favorite Love Swept author was a woman named Barbara Boswell.
Oh, yeah, now, of course.
I've talked about her before because my favorite series was the ones where a bunch of sisters marry a bunch of brothers, the Bradys and the Ramseys. And there were like 4 or 5 of those. And I've read them all and I've rebought them all on Amazon. And they're still kind of amazing. The Ramseys were like the mean Houstons and like the Bradys were just like good West Virginia girls. But in Darling Obstacles, which is Love Swept 95, Surgeon Greg Wilder has 4 kids and he is, you know, too busy to watch those fucking kids. So one of his sons,
men don't watch children.
Listen, the shit's wild. I reread this week. So his babysitter is a mom in the like local school. So her son and his son are like best friends. And so she watches the kids after school. And in one Friday night, he is really late picking them up and he's there like with a date and she's obnoxious and the kids are like, we don't want to go. We want to stay with Maggie. And basically all of a sudden he like sees her for the first time. And here's the part that is like, I'm going to tell you like the wildest shit about this book. So she is, even though she has three kids, she's actually like 32 or 35.
Sure.
I mean, she wasn't real young, which I was like, oh, that surprised me because I was used to the, you know, young 20 ingenues. But she was that with the first husband. Yeah.
I think I've read this book. I'm looking at the picture, the cover right now. I know that white nighty, that white silk nighty up the thigh.
Right.
The banister, the curvy banister.
Yeah. Like basically that he's all of a sudden he's like, oh, she's real beautiful. And the next morning he like shows up when she's making pancakes and
breakfast. Can't wait.
They make out on the stairs, and I was like, they just get
stair
right to
sex.
It.
Stair sex. Nice.
I know. I mean, he's like feeling her up. She's like a whatever. Anyway, the thing that's really, I remember really vividly about this is they're like, they sleep over, you know, they're sleeping, the kids are asleep, they don't realize the parents are together. And there's this whole scene I remembered really vividly where the littlest kid like wakes up and thinks there's a monster. And she's like a super mom, of course, and like, mm-hmm. you know, gives him like a Lego gun and tells him to like zap them. And then sure, they go sure. back to sleep.
All my parenting comes from romance novels.
She was camp, I guess, right? Yeah. So anyway, I think one of the things that's really interesting, though, is it's grim at the beginning of the book. She has just landed a job as the like local secretary at the school all the kids go to. But she had been working the night shift at fucking BWI at a ticket counter. Yeah. And he's paying her $3 an hour. And I was like, 1980s. And then at one point, she's like, I do feel really sorry for him. It just must be really hard to be a surgeon. And I was like, ma'am, you're fucking working the overnight shift.
Ma'am.
You're feeling sorry for the wrong person.
Let's talk about what's hard.
Right? Goddamn. And then at the end, I think,
they're both widowed?
Yes.
They're both widowed.
Yeah.
It's interesting because like the divorce piece is interesting.
Yeah, right.
You didn't see a lot of divorce early days.
No, it was like.
A lot of death. Lot of dead spouses.
And we don't even really know what happened to his wife. She just died, but her husband was a cop.
I mean, you can't fall in love with a married man.
No.
So, sorry.
Yeah, but.
But if you're going to do your Brady, if you're going to do Brady Bunch fanfic, they both got to be widowed.
It's fucking Brady Bunch fanfic.
Was Mrs. Brady widowed? I know Mr. Brady was widowed.
I don't know. I'm sure she must have been.
Where are Brady Bunch people? We got to know. Where are those first parents? Those first wives?
I have no idea why I so vividly remembered this book, but I really did.
Well, you know what? Because it just got you. It got you.
It did.
Love Swept Golden Classic.
Yep, that's right.
I'm naming all these. We're putting the numbers in because Steve Amendown listens and I want him to know. What is going to circulate right out of the Brown Pop Culture Library this week?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Also, what I'm kind of hoping for, I'm kind of hoping Steve's going to do a thread of this later where he'll be like, Barbara Boswell was.
Yes, Steve, please.
The daughter of Jennifer and Mike Boswell, the billionaires and Salt, the Morton Salt family.
Sure.
I'm making all this up. None of this is true.
I think, here's the thing. I think at the end of this book, Maggie is fucking pregnant. And I got to tell you, it was going to be like eight kids. And I just didn't understand any of it.
And then you said eight is enough.
Yeah. Scene. All right, Sarah, what do you got next me?
Well, we're skipping. We're going to save Elizabeth Lowell. So we're going to talk about. Oh, my God. We're going to talk about the girl who can speak to animals. Oh, my God. Okay, wait. I got to pull it up. Hang on. So I wanted to name all the numbers, but I don't actually have the number for this one. My second pick is Hot Touch by Deborah Smith. And what you need to know about this, you guys, please go to show notes and at least look at the covers of these because, first of all,
it's going to be amazing.
They're all perfection. Second of all, this book is set in Louisiana. It came out September 1989. It is a love swept book. And it is set in a bayou mansion owned by Paul Ballou. And the cover is very important to me because if anybody has been in a Bayou mansion in September, they know that cable knit sweaters are usually not...
I'm not just thinking required. About it. It's January in Chicago.
Someone call Farrah Rochon and confirm with me that no, literally no one in Louisiana owns a cable knit sweater, let alone wears one in September. But Paul Ballou is cold-blooded. And so he has inherited, or he lives on this. I can't remember. I told you I didn't reread because I felt like it was important for me to give you the feel of the book. Okay, so I don't know. He lives in this mansion and it's kind of dilapidated. It's like he can't afford it, this mansion. But he has a pet wolf at this mansion, which is important because his wolf is depressed. And the wolf is supposed to be in a movie. Like, he needs the money. They're shooting a movie at this mansion. And this wolf is critical to this movie. Like, it's like a movie. It's like Turner and Hooch, but it's in a mansion and a
in the bayou. What would Nick say? Like, Nick's, what would Nick say?
Right, exactly. Oh, yeah, it's like in Valhall, right? But so the wolf is important to the story because the wolf has to act in this movie. Like, they, when the film studio came, they were like, oh, how lucky, we need both a Bayou mansion and an actor wolf. So fine. So he has this pet wolf, and this pet wolf was very well behaved, except now the wolf is depressed and won't act. So Hollywood. Right, now I'm imagining Eric listening going, what the fuck
is happening? Why is
so Hollywood.
It's amazing.
At the end of this, he'll text me and be like, this is what people think romance novels are. And I'll be like, true, and they're amazing.
I know. There's no shame in this game.
I
know. None.
I don't feel bad.
No.
So, this is bad. Like, they're losing money.
Yeah.
The studio's losing money. Like, time is money, you guys. This wolf has got to act. What the hell is the problem with this wolf? So, they call Caroline Fitzsimmons.
Sure.
Who is listed in the cover copy as mysterious.
The wolf whisperer.
She is an animal trainer and the best in Hollywood. The best there is. She can get a cat to tap dance. She is great. You have cats. You know that's hard.
So, agree.
But she has a dark secret, which honestly, you guys, I can't remember what it is. But she doesn't go back. She's from she's from Louisiana, but she doesn't go back because she has a Louisiana problem.
I don't know.
Home. She doesn't like it. So, but they've given her enough money. They've basically explained and they've told her, they've used like basically the magic words, the wolf. There's something wrong with this wolf. And she can't bear to see an animal in pain.
Even in Louisiana.
So she gets on a plane. She flies to Louisiana. She gets out of the car. She meets, but I mean, Jen, what animal does she really have to tame?
This hero, of course.
I mean, obviously the hero.
And his dilapidated shack in
Louisiana. So the hero's like, what? I know how to train my wolf. I know what I need to do. Like, I know how to save this wolf. Like, I don't need some uppity L.A. animal trainer. Coming in here. You guys have all read this hero. So here's what I remember. At one point, so it turns out, surprise, surprise, that Caroline isn't just a really good animal trainer. Caroline can communicate with animals telepathically.
Of course.
So she basically is like, hey, wolf, why so sad? And here's the thing. Animals don't communicate like people. They can't, like, really tell you. So this wolf is real sad and keeps saying, like, friend, friend. And so she's like, I don't understand. And he doesn't believe that she can talk to animals. And at one point, she's lying in bed and she's making a spider walk in circles on the ceiling. These are the things I remember from this book. My favorite thing is when there's an alligator in the way. And they have to get a car up the drive. But there's a big gator in the middle of the driveway. And he says, well, if you can talk to animals, like, if you're so good with animals.
Yeah, right.
Like, why don't you tell this gator to move? And he doesn't know that she really can talk to animals telepathically. Right. So she gets out of the car and she's walking. You're in her POV. And she's like, I'm very concerned because alligators are basically dinosaurs. And they're so prehistoric that it probably won't understand me. And I hope it'll understand me because I don't want to lose face in front of this beast of a man. And then she says, get out of the way or else I'll turn you into a handbag, out loud. And in her head, she's like, please move out of the way. I'm trying to make a good impression. And the alligator gets up and walks up.
That's amazing.
Anyway, I do have to content warn because the wolf is depressed because he's in love with a neighboring wolf. No, not wolf. With a neighboring, a dog in the neighboring estate who is in a dog fight ring. Oh. And, like, Caroline finds out, and then there's lots of conflict because they have to break up this dog fighting ring. And Paul Ballou is like, no, that's a good neighbor. There's nothing wrong with him. What are you talking about? There's no dog fighting ring. And so she, like, gets her. She climbs a fence, and she rips a skirt, and she whatevers. And ultimately, everyone lives happily ever after. There's a secondary love story with a wolf and a dog. What Bam. More could you want, you guys? It is 192 pages long, this book. It easily has 5 books in it. And because I told you, so you can get it in ebook form. Deborah Smith still writes romances, but it looks like she writes like sweet, like maybe even cozy mysteries.
I mean, she like used all her magic in that one book.
I mean,
she had to go to a different genre.
I don't know, but it's pretty great. And I got to tell you, because I've been reading the Goodreads reviews for all of these books, one of them says that this book remains relevant today. So I'm not sure what that means. But
you're going to find out, aren't you?
But there it is. Deborah Smith's Hot Touch. Don't miss it.
Oh, God.
You guys, I just also want to say, I hope everybody understands, like, how joyous Jen
and
I.
These books make me, oh, my God, you guys.
Every second of laughter that you hear is just us, like, mainlining, like, happy romance novel noise.
Yes.
And I think that's the problem. I think as a genre, we have, like, lost the understanding that, like, these books are bonkers, and that's part of the joy of it. Like, fuck anybody who comes at us and is like, that book sounds stupid. No, it doesn't. It sounds amazing, I want to read it right now.
In one of the Love Swept I have, Listen for the Drummer by Joan Elliott Pickard, Love Swept 166, it actually has the postcard in the middle.
Yeah, sign up for a Love Swept package.
I want to mail it and see what happens. $9.95 for 4 books a month.
That sounds great.
Coming right to your fucking house. I, for a while,
and you get a plate or something. You get, like, commemorative stuff, too.
Probably if it was now, you'd get better commemorative stuff. I also think I had, for a while, a Harlequin Blaze. I was going to say prescription, because that's how it feels. Medicine. Yeah,
it's medicine.
Okay, Sarah, can we talk about something a little more serious I noticed as I was rereading these? So I'm going to talk about Demon Lover by Kathleen Creighton.
Ooh.
Which was...
I'm guessing not a paranormal.
No. Silhouette Intimate Moments in 84.
Oh, I like those. They looked like the summer editions from the Babysitter's Club.
Yeah, it was like the white with the red, right? And of course, this guy has a real Tom Selleck mustache.
The Babysitter's Club Summer Spectaculars.
Because it was 1985, January 1985. And I actually did a... on Smart Bitches, you know how you can do like help a bitch out? Mm. I actually like really was like trying to find this one. It's real problematic, and it's about a woman who is a border patrol agent. That's not aging well. She's fucking ICE. Ugh. And what she's doing is she actually gets caught up in, and I really vividly remember like this part of the plot. She gets caught up in, she's going to arrest some coyotes. And she
essentially... What is a coyote?
someone who's like running people across the border. So,
people who are actually like,
yeah, right.
Okay.
And so it's interesting. It's like she's, her sympathies are clearly with like the people who are being abused by the coyotes. Like she's like, they take their money and they abandon them in the desert and these are bad guys. And so she gets caught by what she thinks is a coyote. And I did not reread. I read the beginning and the end. I did not reread any of the middle because I'm sure it's real fucking problematic and crazy shit racist. But she gets caught by a man she knows is an American, but is like working with the coyotes. He speaks great Spanish, but he's got blue eyes.
Of course, right?
And it turns out at the end that he was like a DEA agent.
And DEI is diversity, equity, and inclusion. That's not present in this book.
God, no. Here's what I really remember, and I reread the end of this because I was really fascinated by it, is she falls in love with him, but then she can't forgive herself for falling in love with a criminal. And I was like, there's no dark romance back then. Back then, if you fell in love with someone who you thought was a criminal and was doing bad things and taking advantage of people, that was like a real night of the soul for you. And this was like her big thing. Like how even then when she finds out that he was undercover, she can't blame her. She can't help but blame herself for falling in love with him when she didn't know that. Right. And even though he's like, you just kind of knew, she's like, did I, though? Mm-hmm. So that's like the whole dilemma. But I'll tell you what was really interesting about this book. And we don't have to talk about it now. Maybe if we do like romantic suspense, we can talk about it. He's a Vietnam vet because it's 85.
Yeah.
So he was, you know, he's 35. He'd come back 10 years early, you know, spend 10 years. And I had really forgotten just how many of these heroes, these mid-80s categories heroes, are men who had come home from Vietnam.
Yeah. Yes.
And it was,
you know, yeah. I want to talk about this, but I don't think we can do it justice today.
Right.
And I think we need to be able to do this justice. I want to talk about military romances and the kind of work that they are doing on a really social level.
Yes.
The kind of emotional work they're doing for readers, particularly wives.
Women and wives, yes, absolutely. Not now.
I don't want to be flippant about these books. Like, no. I wanna dig deep on them in a different way.
Because it really got me thinking, and it was just like really fascinating that I had no interest in rereading this book, although, like I said, I did reread the end. And the whole like sort of dilemma of like hers was, you know, like I fell in love with you when you were not a good person. What does that say about me?
Is it like morality chain, but in a complicated way?
Yeah, almost, right? Like what? Yeah. Like I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting. It wasn't like silly at all. I was also really impressed, I guess, at how like it felt really long. Like those intimate moments were like the longer ones, right? The ones that were like probably 260 pages.
Yeah.
And not like a silly one, but one that really got me thinking about like, the work that romance does.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's interesting because I think there are two different. I think that is a very specific kind of archetype, that sort of veteran hero who comes home from war. We see that in like the Navy SEAL, the Green Beret. Mm-hmm. But my last pick for today, and I know you have an Elizabeth Lowell, too.
Yeah.
Is Elizabeth Lowell's Warrior, which, Jen, if you would like to see, this is.
Yeah.
This is, I mean, like, it is scotch taped. The cover is scotch taped back onto here. I have read this book. It is Silhouette Desire number 631, April 1991. And it begins with the line, I don't even have to read it. She was the wrong woman at the wrong place. In the wrong place. I got to start over. It begins with, she was the wrong woman in the wrong place at the wrong time, and she was headed straight for him. And our hero, impenetrable Nevada Blackthorn, Segundo of the Rocking M Ranch, was born of a warrior breed. The blood of his ancestors had given him strength, and years spent in Afghanistan's bitter struggle for freedom had taught him hard lessons.
Interesting.
He believed in survival and nothing else. Now, let me tell you something. Nevada is about the most closed off hero I have ever read.
All of hers were.
Oh. But Eden is blonde and perfect in every way. And a cat scientist, a big cat scientist, who's been sent for by Tennessee Blackthorn, who's like the main dude of the Blackthorns. Those of you who remember the Blackthorns know that they were all named for
states, right? Wasn't one Utah?
Utah, Colorado. I don't think there was a Colorado, but it's like Utah, Nevada, Tennessee. Carolina was one of the children. Anyway. So there they are. She's been sent for because they have a big cat, like a lynx or a something. It's not a lynx. It's like a big black panther or something. I don't think it's a panther either. I don't know what it is. It's a black cat, a big black cat that's like on the ranch. And she's had babies like in this like den, and they're concerned. I don't actually know why they're concerned. They're concerned. So they call Eden, the cat scientist, and she comes out to track the cat and like learn more about the cat and like experience the cat. And but she needs a guide through this, whatever, this ranch, Montana ranch or whatever. And so, of course, Nevada is the only one around who can ride a horse, I guess. I don't know. But he is assigned to her. So he has to take her up to the cat space. She, interestingly, also has a wolf whose name is Baby. And so she lives on, she lives like in a house, like in a little cabin, like out in the middle of nowhere on this ranch where she's studying this cat. And for some reason they like learn to, for some reason they have to be together a lot. Sure. Anyway, over the course of this book, at one point, like a boulder falls on him and his leg is stuck. And she has to get the boulder off of him, and she's like trying to like lever the boulder up with a big stick, and she's hurting herself, and it's killing him to watch her hurt herself. And at another point, they discuss the fact that when cats have sex, like barbs attach like male cats to female cats.
I've read that.
Well, I learned about that from Elizabeth Lowell from Silhouette Desire, number 631. And also, as part of this story, you know, like Eden, like there's a lot of like when you're out in the wilderness, like anything can kill you. A cold can kill you. Like you can get sick, whatever. And because Eden has this like dark past where she and her like family of lots of kids, like were somebody died of the flu, a child died of the flu. But most importantly, Nevada can scent pregnancy on women.
Oh, shit.
So when you put a character on the page who can scent pregnancy in women, you obviously wonder what's going to happen. Make. I mean, it's so.
What's going to happen?
It's really so surprising.
Elizabeth Lowell was my entire jam.
Do you guys want to know who takes the finger? I mean, Elizabeth Lowell. She's like this fucking guy. He can smell when a woman is pregnant.
And
I'm like, you know, 11-year-old me is just like, oh, yeah, that checks out for sure. That, yes.
You guys, there was one of her books. I'm gonna talk about Chain Lightning in a minute. But there was one, and it's, I don't remember. I thought it was in this series, but she, like, you know, grew up with her. Her parents were like anthropologists, so she doesn't even know what society is because she lived in, you know, a forest or whatever. And at the end, she's like obsessed with like making him a shirt to show him how much she loves him.
But
and she's like,
but she's, I bet, like, it wasn't like fossils.
No, she's like, look at these fucking stitches. How are they so perfect? And I was like, Elizabeth Lowell really leaned hard into like there is a singular item, a symbol.
Yep.
In this book.
In this one, it's a ring. Yes.
Yep. Oh, like she was not dicking around at all. So, yeah, this woman essentially like makes him a shirt by hand or some shit like that. And then, of course, they always disappear at the end. And then the men are like, oh, but I loved her.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Well, at the end of this, Nevada smiles, and it's a smile to make angels weep. And it's the first time she's ever seen anybody smile. She's ever seen him smile. And it's like the most magnificent smile. Also, he has this like really pelty black beard, which I've always sort of liked. Like he's also a wolf.
Sure.
Which I'm in. Course. I'm in for it. Like, you know, I just, when we talk about the things that blooded us or like the are in things in books, like the things that really get our juices going. And then you go back and you think about these early books like beards, like pelty beards. Forget it. That's 100% Elizabeth Lowell just like tapping into my brain and like inserting that chip.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Elizabeth Lowell, you're a nonsense person. I love it.
Yeah. My favorite by hers. I read it 800 times, but I'm afraid to read it again because it's so perfect in my memory. And I know if I read it again, I'd be like, what the fuck was this? It's called A Woman Without Lies. And he basically is like, of course, convinced because, you know, one bad woman in his past always ruins these fucking men forever. Mm-hmm. Like, whoa. And, you know, he's convinced they're all, you know, trash. And then he meets the woman without lies and she doesn't lie to him. And oh, fuck, they like it's all crazy. I could like tell you the entire plot of this book. But what I really remember is that he is convinced, of course, like the way you're pure, of course, is that you're a virgin. And
of course,
he doesn't believe anybody's a virgin. And then they're fishing and a fucking somebody cuts the line and the hook's going to come back and get, you know, like, gets into his shoulder and she pulls it out and then they fuck and he can't like believe she's penis. A virgin. I mean, and what's with the fuck. Barbs?
What?
No, they do.
She he's pulls like, out the hook and then they yes, fuck.
And he's like, they're all, it's all so hot and sexy and I just saved you
and
from.
And no birth control ever.
Of course.
And so right? Why would you?
Well, so God, I mean, what the hell? And then he's like, wait, she's really a virgin. I was wrong about her. But at that point, she's like, fuck
well,
you.
And I bet, is she a virgin because he found her hymen like all the way up in there? This is my other in all these old romances, oh, the hymen is in the exact wrong place, you guys. I used to joke that I wanted to buy the URL whereisthehymen.com and just put a diagram, like if you type it in, there's just a diagram of where the hymen should be versus like
where it is
inside and like a steel door up in there.
Oh my God. You have to really unlock it with your love.
My
okay.
God. The things romance taught us about sex that are both correct and also then, tremendously problematic.
Yeah. Well, in Chain Lightning, what
also
happens
Elizabeth
is.
Also Elizabeth Lowell,
which I reread this week, kind of like with one eye shut. Mandy works
no, you
for.
Didn't. You reread it with oh, both eyes like, open because that's a bonkers book.
Oh, yeah. Have you read this one?
Of course.
I mean, Mandy is like, oh, Todd has some tragic, weepy past. She ends up essentially getting hoodwinked to go to the Great Barrier Reef with Damon Sutter.
All these names, too. I can't ever come up with good names. Elizabeth Lowell, every single character has a crazy,
oh my
amazing
God.
Name.
Let's make it Elizabeth Lowell name generator. Okay, anyway. She, as it turns out, is fine on big jumbo jets. She gets all the way to Sydney, but then they put her on some tiny little puddle jumper. And she is, like, terrified.
Yeah.
And they're camping.
Camping.
Yep. They have to camp. And, you know, and it turns out that she is actually a marine biologist. But she, through a tragic story in her past, she got, like, crashed in a small plane and drowned and, you know, whatever.
She drowned, but it was fine.
But it's fine. So now Damon's, like, real shitty to her. How dare you ruin my vacation and, you know, whatever. And then he sees how brave she is, that she wants to keep on, like, learn how to put her face in the water again, basically. And then...
She's like my kid learning to swim.
She's like, I can't do it. And he's like, she's so brave. And then, oh my God, here's the part that's real crazy, though. They do it. And he's like, I don't want to get pregnant. She's like, don't worry about it. But then, you know, at the end, like, they just fly their separate ways. And then she, like, disappears herself from the office, which
surprise,
I fucking liked.
Surprise, secret baby.
Right? Surprise, secret baby. But she was just like, I mean, she says something like, I don't remember, like some trick of her words, right? Where she's basically like, don't worry about it. Nothing would be unwanted or it couldn't happen. But what she means is I'd love to get pregnant again, right? So she goes to the office. She erases her whole fucking work history and takes off.
Sure.
Right? And then he comes back and is like, where is she?
Sure. Right?
And then he has to, like, track her down. And, of course, it takes a while. And when he finds her, she is pregnant with fucking twins.
Yeah, of course.
Of course. Because,
I mean, because one is not enough. Eight is, but one is not.
Yeah. What the ocean stole from her, he has given to her twice.
Oh my God. Can I also say, interestingly enough, at the end of my Elizabeth Lowell, Eden pieces out, erases her life, and is ready to have a baby without him. And he has to go get her. Here's the thing. We also need to talk secret babies at some point. But what's really interesting about the way that Elizabeth Lowell tackles a secret baby is the singular rule of the secret baby for me is that it can only work if the hero returns for the woman before the baby is in the mix.
Yeah.
So she can have, the baby can be a child, the baby can be in utero, the baby can be wherever the baby needs to be for the plot, but he needs to go back for her. Right?
Not for the baby. Right.
Because then, like, that's the only way, in my mind, the happily ever after can happen. And Elizabeth Lowell always nails that every time.
I think that Elizabeth Lowell is the one who really convinced me that, like, men needed to be fucking miserable while they were groveling. She needed to get gone.
Oh, yeah.
Right? In Elizabeth, in these fucking books, women are like, peace the fuck out, buddy. I'm going to put up with your bullshit anymore.
Elizabeth
and they
Lowell,
have to, like,
Fate
lay with it.
Stands you and your grovels. We do.
Oh, hell yes.
Yes. We hell stand yes. a queen, as Adriana would say.
Yeah, we do.
I also want to just say we're getting, like, because we enjoyed ourselves so much. And also we talked about camp for 10 minutes at the beginning of this episode. it's fine. You guys probably won't hear it. It's going to be boring. So we also have to talk about the fact that these contemporaries, bar none, are about women with jobs. Like, and they they always have amazing jobs. Like, they're photographers or professors or big cat scientists or marine biologists or, you know, like, they are women who can really, like, hold their own, pay their own bills, raise their own kids. They'll be fine without you as single mothers. And what I love about this is I remember when I first started writing, somebody, a reader, asked me a question at an event about, like, it was early days. And it was about 9 rules. And somebody raised their hand and they said, would Callie be okay without Ralston? Like, would she be able to live without Ralston?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like instantly like, yeah, like, would Ralston be able to live without Callie? No.
Yeah.
but like every one of these categories, what the story they tell is like pure, like woman, like skilled, competent female.
Yeah.
Like skilled, competent heroine brings down hero who like literally just can't, like he can't even tie his shoes without a woman to help him.
Yeah. I really do think it was very formative for me in that way, for sure.
Right? I feel really blessed by having grown up in the era of categories.
Yeah.
I also feel like when I write, I'm really glad we did this. Like, I'm about to enter the, like, you know, real final bits of this book. And, like, having this kind of, like, the heartbeat of romance for me is these, these bananas stories. Which I loved.
And you know what I will say? I still go back to categories when I need to like recharge. Like category to me is like the, it's like the purest form of romance.
Mm-hmm.
You just start plugging right into like what exactly it means. Categories are about tropes. They are about delivering what you want. They are about, it doesn't have to subvert the trope. It just has to do the trope perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Category is a fucking gymnast that is every single time is like, and now I'm running down and I'm fucking doing the vault and bam, fuck you. Now let me do it again. And I'm going to do it 100 times a month.
Yes.
And I feel like that is the thing that I really still, and you know, when you talk about people who are doing it wrong, like if Rhys Ryan
knows
how to fucking write a category.
She
does. And they are channeling,
really,
right? They are channeling some of the greatest tropes, like, right?
Yeah.
Naima Simone writes great categories. Mm-hmm. Now she's writing for Silhouette Desire. There are so many books that I... Juno Rushton, who I loved, that one book has a Harlequin romantic suspense coming out, I think, next month, right?
Right.
So I was like, don't sleep on categories, man. They are a delight.
No, and also for the writers who are listening, and I say this all the time when I give my workshop on conflict, but nobody does conflict like a great category writer. And the way that you learn, truly, the way that you can learn how to layer conflict on the page and how to make sure the conflict moves fast, like a bullet from a gun, is by reading these books that are 220 pages long.
Yep.
And somehow pack all this in. Like, yep. It's really remarkable. Other people I really love who are writing right now, or I don't even know if they're writing right now, but writers who recently I have loved, Marie Donovan, Kathleen O'Reilly.
Oh, yeah.
Who, you know, who's mm-hmm. who sets her books in New York City. Tessa Bailey's, all her Entangled categories. Yeah.
They're great. Yeah.
So I am really happy we did this episode. I know. It made me really happy. I had a bad day. And
I am going to be super excited to put these MFing covers in show notes.
Yeah. And we'll tweet them. Maybe we could put them in the Twitter theme. Yes. The Twitter, Jen usually does a Twitter thread on Wednesday mornings.
Yeah.
And
they are amazing.
And please check out show notes, because what we will do too is like try to give you a sense of like who these – we both named authors who, you know, you can't really find anymore. So – but Deborah Smith is – like you can buy Hot Touch directly from her. You can buy Warrior directly from Elizabeth Lowell, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope you guys had as much fun listening to this one as we had making it.
I mean, and I'm like, Carol Mortimer.
Oh, yeah, Carol. Oh, my God, Carol Mortimer. But, like, also Iris Johansson. P.S., did you see the listing for Iris Johansson's house?
No.
Iris Johansson is, I know, I'm sure it's over now, but sold her house, which was in, like, the middle of nowhere, and a fucking palace. I mean, like, this was Iris Johansson. I mean, like, yeah, of course.
Sure.
And it had like a movie theater in it. We'll put links in show notes to the listing.
The house that White Satin built.
The house that those Swoosh books built. My God. Yeah, right. So many. And I didn't even get to talk about the one that I remember that I don't remember. So anyway, next time. You guys, tell us about your favorite old categories, the old ones, you know, the ones that we're talking about, the ones where you're like, what is happening? Like, I'll never, like, I love that the other day Joanna Shoup was tweeting with, I think, Kristen Callahan, and she was like, have you read the Ann Stewart where the heroine falls in love with her brother?
What? You guys, here's the thing, this blew my mind, though. Kristen Callahan was like, yeah, that shit's like 40 years old. It really feels like reading historical. And someone's like, well, yeah, like in 1980, 40 years ago, it would have been like a romance set during World War II. And I had to like take to my bed.
Oh,
I was
did
like,
you?
Oh, shit.
Was it like hearing the turn of the century?
I say it all the time now.
I know, it's bananas. But you know what, you guys, like these books. Yeah, what's amazing is it's like you're looking at like you've dug up a time capsule.
Yeah.
And exactly. Like you have to come at them as like with the delighted eye of a scientist. A big cat scientist, if you will. A dragon professor. A marine biologist who's afraid of putting her face in the water.
Working the night shift at BWI just to fucking put food on the table for your kids and babysitting for $3 an hour.
A person, a scientist who can telepathically speak to animals.
Oh, shit. It's all so good.
All right, you guys. That is Fated Mates for the week. Next week, who knows what it'll be. It'll be a thing. It will hopefully be Lorraine Heath's Waking Up with the Duke, but I am hard on deadline right now, you guys, so it may be something else if I can't get there. But I know that you'll stick with us through this. We are Fated Mates. I'm Sarah McLean. You can find us at on Twitter at Fated Mates, on Instagram at Fated Mates Pod. Jen is Jen Reads Romance.
I am. You can buy buttons and stickers from my friend Kelly at my shop at jenreadsromance.com. You can buy t-shirts from Jordan Dene. We'll put links in show notes from Sarah.
Fated Mates is produced by Eric Mortensen. And you can also call us and tell us about the book that blooded you, or tell us about a crazy category romance that you really loved. The number is 646-450-3766. And if you stay tuned after the outro music, you will hear somebody telling us about the book they love.
Awesome.
Hi, Jen and Sarah. My name's Nikki. I'm from Richmond, Virginia. I'm calling to tell you about the book that blooded me. I found my book through Audible. I was just looking for random things to listen to and had a credit. And I came across Molly Harper's Nice Girls Don't Have Fangs. I listened to it as I was road tripping to the beach, as I had freshly left my ex-husband. And it made me laugh, and it made me cry, and it made me have hope again after a really hard time. So I'm kind of late to romance. I was 29 when I first found it, and I have been a devoted Molly Harper fan ever since, and absolutely recommend checking out any of her series, but especially the Half Moon Hollow series and the Southern Eclectic series. Thanks so much for this amazing podcast. It's opened me up to so many new books that I didn't think I would find on my own. If you want to follow me online, I'm at Nikolooch, N-I-K-K-I-L-O-O-C-H. Thanks again. Bye.